Chairman, and with me is Senator Ferguson and Senator Coghill. And it is a request of the sponsor that we take up the sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 414 first. And so, Senator Ferguson, I will acknowledge you if you'd like to speak for your bill.
I introduced this bill originally on 311. I introduced this bill on 311-66, and as of today, I've introduced a sponsor substitute, which I believe to be Department of Community and Regional Affairs and the Department of Natural Resources will testify on the bill. The first draft was done hastily to get in with the 35-day limitation that we had, mm-hmm. and the sponsor substitute had a little more, bit more thought into it and then provided to us. And at this time, I'd take your lead on who should testify first.
Okay. Let me see. Are there any questions of Senator Ferguson regarding this bill? Okay. If not, then Ned, do you want to testify first since you were here first?
Yes, Madam Chair.
And we are on the teleconference.
Thank you. Madam Chair, my name is Ned Farquhar from the Department of Natural Resources. And just briefly today, you have in your packets, I hope, a letter that was delivered just a couple of hours ago from
yes.
Commissioner Winnicke. On attachment one of that letter, the title says municipal conveyances, and it should read municipal entitlements, because not all those lands have been conveyed at this date. For instance, you look down the list, and near the bottom, see the municipality of Anchorage. Entitlement of 44,893 acres, and we certainly haven't been able to convey that much acreage to Anchorage. And I apologize for that mistake in the letter.
Did everyone
I couldn't quite follow. What?
It's on Commissioner Winnicke's letter dated March 11th.
Right, and what's the change?
The title at the top of attachment one should read municipal entitlements, not municipal conveyances. Madam Chair, we support this bill and have worked with the sponsor to get it in shape so it can come before the committee. I'm sure that there will be many questions on it as it moves along, and we'll be happy to answer them. We're also working with the Department of Community and Regional Affairs on a couple of areas of the bill that they're concerned about as well. So I guess I would just at this point be available to answer questions unless you would like to walk through the bill or something like that.
Okay, we may want you to walk through the bill. Would you prefer to do that, or would you prefer to talk with the Regional Affairs?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Yes,
we are talking.
Madam Chair, and I apologize for being a bit late, have you gone over the bill as to what it does? And I think that
Senator Ferguson introduced today a sponsor substitute, and he just spoke briefly to it for about 30 seconds, and then wanted the departments to testify, and
at some point, I think we need to have some explanation.
Senator Ferguson, do you prefer that Ned do it, or the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, or do you prefer to take us through it?
I don't mind which department is.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Deputy Commissioner Jeff Smith from CNRA can walk through the bill for you.
Okay, good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator,
don't let him go away.
I won't go away.
And we are dealing, for the committee, we are dealing with a sponsor substitute. Okay, go ahead, and we are on teleconference.
Madam Chair, we've done an analysis of the sponsor substitute that Senator Ferguson has introduced, and I could briefly go into an explanation of what that is. The sponsor substitute adds a new section, number one, which limits the size of municipal land entitlements to no more than 400,000 acres. There are some municipalities may be entitled to more under the 10%, but this would cap it for those at 400,000, which we don't have a problem with at all.
What municipalities would be affected by this restriction?
My understanding is just the North Slope Borough would be the only current borough that's formed that would have an entitlement over 400,000 at just simply leaving it at the 10%.
Yeah, I see Mount Sioux Borough is up to like 353, but that is their full entitlement, and they wouldn't be entitled to anything else. Is that right?
Not at this time, no.
Okay. Will they be under this bill?
Well, if there were additional, as the bill does later on, if there were additional state land selections made and those were located within the jurisdiction of the Mat-Su borough. At some future time, it's conceivable that the Mat-Su could go over the 400,000 cap.
Okay, so this 400,000 cap would be
being our,
if an existing borough annexed a larger area that was, you know, much larger than what they are or something like that, and they went over, then the 400,000 would pertain to their new expanded borders as well as their existing ones. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
And it's my understanding from DNR that they're projecting out that based on future land selection, the state might make, Mat-Su borough might be entitled to 20,000 acres more should those land selections go through.
Without any additional annexations.
Right. So they'd be under the cap still.
Okay, thank you.
Section 2 is the same as Section 1 in the original bill, which extends out entitlements in terms of, there's the one section in the bill which establishes straight entitlements for all the existing boroughs that existed back then. This would allow those boroughs to opt for that or the one under this, or the larger, whichever is the larger entitlement, the statutorily mandated entitlement or under this new legislation.
So they would have the choice then of going under the existing or the proposed?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Section 3 of the sponsor substitute is a new section. It is intended to prevent a municipality from obtaining land in addition to the total amount available under its entitlement. Section 3 of the original bill is deleted from the sponsor substitute, but is not deleted from the Title 29. The proposed new language from the deleted Section 3 is now contained within Section 2 of the sponsor substitute.
Let me ask you, on Section 3, where the section is repealed in that reenacted to read, do you happen to know what that was before it says, because other title conveyances of state lands to municipalities shall be counted towards the fulfillment of a municipality's entitlement. What kind of other kind of conveyances of state land might we be talking about?
Okay, this is where we might have a school that was built and the state transferred title to the land to build a school on in that community, or other public facility type projects where the state was the owner of the land and they conveyed title to the municipality for the construction and operation of the public works project.
Okay, thank you. All right.
Vince,
yes.
Madam Chair, I just received the information from you right now, so I haven't had a chance to look at this, but do we know how much land is out there? What are the impacts of this bill? Who's going to receive what?
We think the basic benefits are going to accrue initially with this bill to the new Northwest Arctic Borough that's proposed to be formed up in the northwest part of the state. The city of Anderson would benefit. The Mat-Su Borough would benefit. And maybe with some annexation talk, Yakutat could benefit. But we think the real impact of this bill will be felt for all of the municipalities in the years to come as the state completes its land selections under the Statehood Act. And as new boroughs and new municipalities are formed, they will have an opportunity to select and have state land become municipal-owned land. And so while there's a few that would be impacted after the effective date, the more dramatic impact will be felt of this piece of legislation in the years to come.
Senator Cogdill.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
That does not answer my question. My question is, how many municipalities are there out there that did not receive entitlement who would now receive entitlement under this, and what are we talking about in terms of acreage, for example? Am I missing something, or do we have the information? How much, if land became available, would Anderson have? Did we have a number of municipalities out there that...
This just gives a rough cost, 10 to 20, but maybe Ned can speak to
but
it.
But there so. Were there are a number of different things that happened. For example, communities where there was no land, and I think Anderson is one. There were certain involved in the lawsuit, such as the North Slope Borough. and there was a time of settlement, and they did not receive land. So all I'm saying is, what kind of potential is out there for communities, and what are those communities? So we have some idea of impact, because aren't we pulling together some past problems that existed and people didn't get their land? And I just am trying to get some sense of the magnitude, and maybe I'm missing it. Maybe it's here and I don't see it.
The specific acreage is not in there. In our position paper, we list out the municipalities that would be immediately affected by the passage of this. In terms of the acreage, I'll defer to Ned on those communities.
Madam Chair, as shown in Commissioner Warnicke's letter, we only have a characterization from our staff at this point of what kind of an effect the bill would have, so we don't have any acreage figures. What we tried to do is to take in the attachments the amount of land that's classified in categories that would be available for selection if it were within a borough and if the borough hadn't reached its entitlement. And I realize that's not the kind of calculation that you would like to have, and we're trying to get that together. But it takes a lot of work with the status plots to get that information to you.
The only firm acreage that I could give you would be that of the North Slope Borough, who, through reasons of the lawsuit and other problems existed, had no state entitlements. They would now, if this legislation passed, be entitled to 400,000 acres based on the cap that's within the legislation.
Well, Madam Chair,
yes,
you should have that. You should have that information. You should know the impact. You should know what happened. Are there any extenuating circumstances as to, you know, is it all inclusive, and should it all be all inclusive? It just seems like that's an important part to know, you know, what the magnitude of it is. And I'm not saying that with one position or another, because they don't have one on the bill.
Madam Chair, I think we recognize that, and we're trying to draw that information together now. But it just is a massive job to sit down with each status plat and each village and community and look at them.
Senator Caldwell.
Well, Jeff or Ned, either one, this bill now takes the timeline cap off of anything. So from now on out, we won't have to come back with a special extension of time on land selection within boundaries of municipalities. Is that correct?
That's correct.
In the existing law, it was that you had to do something within a certain time, otherwise you were not eligible. And this is where Anderson's coming in under this new bill, because we had a bill drafted and we were going to put that in. So this will take care of the Anderson situation. All right. Then to answer Senator Sturgalewski's question, it seems that even comes greater into the program. What kind of an impact is this going to have on all state lands in the future? You know, we could see state lands getting totally eroded away. 10% of all of our state entitlements could be out there, and of course maybe that's a good thing, because with local government forming, there's a certain amount of things that come off of your back. Is that, and I'm trying to project her question.
Well, we think it is a positive thing, and maybe in answer to Senator Sturgalewski's concern, is we have a number of different problems that this is going to solve. We've had municipalities that when they were incorporated in the time period passed, there were no land selections within their boundaries. But since that time period, there have been state land selections that they will be now entitled to receive 10% of. In the situation with the North Slope Borough, you had two things at work. You had a legitimate disagreement between the borough and the state on what their entitlement should be. They took the issue to court. It was an administrative problem that they were 2 weeks late applying for the 89,000 acres that they were entitled to under statute, so they were 2 weeks late. Their application was denied because of being late, and that problem will be corrected in this bill. But the impact of this bill, I think, is more going to be felt in the future for newly formed municipalities, for those municipalities that expand out, and for those municipalities where the state makes future land selections within their area. And it's my understanding that we're talking about 25 million acres yet to really be selected by the state under the Statehood Act. So we are talking about considerable land still yet to be applied for.
Well, yes, and then so in Section 2 of the bill, it open-ends at it. You've got a time cap, so the new municipalities that it will be formed in the future. That's my that they have a time cap, and it also opens it up so that any municipality that did not select their 10% within their boundaries can come in. Is that correct?
That's correct, Senator.
And so therefore, municipality X, 2 years from now, they have when they form their local government unit, how long do they have to apply for their 10%?
They'll have 2 years after the state makes their last land selection under the Statehood Act to apply for their municipal entitlement.
So I'm just trying to clarify for those people that are out there that haven't obviously seen this bill. So then it does not attach to the incorporation or the time limits of the incorporation. It's attached to the selections of the native or of the statehood land.
Correct.
Senator Sturgeon.
Yes, Madam Chair. How would this impact, if it's prospective? There was a great deal of work on the municipality of Anchorage, University of Alaska, the Kloodna, I believe, three-way land. Since lands were not available, total lands, they entered into an agreement whereby if military lands and others became available, that there would be it was going to be distributed in a certain way. How would this legislation affect that particular settlement? And I wonder if there are other land trades among state agencies that would be impacted on this in terms of land being made available.
Well, there's two land exchange provisions in existing statute now. One's contained in Title 29, which this bill would repeal. But there's a land exchange in Title 38 that it's our understanding, again, I'll let Ned speak more further to this, that most of the land exchanges that have occurred at the municipal level have occurred under Title 38. So we would think that those land exchanges where problems occurred like that in those communities could still take place.
Madam Chair, we don't see any impact from this bill in those settlements and exchanges, and we don't see it having any effect on Anchorage's outstanding municipal entitlement question.
Does that answer all
your
questions, Senator Fisher?
No, but
oh,
that starts it. I think we need more information.
Okay.
Yes.
Senator Fisher?
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I do support the purpose and the content of this legislation. I do have some questions. First of all, with respect to Anchorage, the parochial, one of the problems that has been encountered is that the appropriation has never been adequate to fund Anchorage payment in lieu of lands for the land efficiency. And I was wondering if the department has any suggestion as to how that might be dealt with while we have this bill before us.
Madam Chair, the Department of Natural Resources has been involved in very intensive negotiations with the municipality of Anchorage in the last few months to try to resolve that question without the state paying any money. We're trying to come up with acreage and considerations that will satisfy Anchorage, and we're working very hard with other state agencies to make prime land available for Anchorage. We don't see this having any influence on that, and I think probably from our point of view, we would rather not see the municipality of Anchorage entitlement issue addressed in this legislation, because it seems to be moving along well.
My question is really from the other direction. Is there anything that could be facilitated within this legislation to permit the department to arrive at something with the municipality of Anchorage? Because I gather one of the questions has been acquisition of land outside or transfer of land to Anchorage outside of municipal boundaries.
Madam Chair, I can look into that and see if there's anything that the staff or that the municipality would recommend in the way of facilitating that settlement.
Okay,
it's a good question.
Thank you. Senator
Chair,
Fisher, you have
in a somewhat different arena, I gather that the selection that a municipality can make is a vacant, unappropriated, unreserved land as defined, right?
Correct,
Madam Chair. I note on page 3 of the bill at the top, the definition of such land that's open to, that is counted for entitlement and open to selection, make some interesting changes, whereas before it referred to private recreational purposes, it now would permit selection of lands classified for public recreation, also land designated for water resources, forestry, wildlife habitat. Is that being done consciously? If so, what is happening here? Why the change in classifications?
Madam Chair, the reason we're changing some of these is that those categories that are eliminated in the bill no longer exist under our new classification system. And what we've done is tried to make the same kinds of land available for municipal entitlement selection. For instance, private recreational and open-to-entry land translates in the new system to settlement land. And we've tried to just make available those lands that we thought either in the past would have been vacant and unclassified, or those lands that were available for settlement under the old system.
Yes, go ahead, Commissioner.
Yes, our department feels that this is one of the most important sections in the bill, that this is this section coming up with a new definition for the land that would be available to computate the entitlement really drives the bill and provides the major benefit to the existing municipalities and those future municipalities.
In what way?
Well, it would expand out the acreage those that they would entitlement would be computed at. If these things were excluded as they are now, the 10% land entitlement would be very small for many areas. But by expanding out the definition of what this land would encompass, gives the municipalities a far greater base to compute what their entitlement actually will be.
Madam Chair, I really have no problem with computing the entitlement on the basis of habitat lands, recreation lands, and so on. It seems to me that a question may arise whether those lands should be subject to selection by the municipality. If, for instance, they're set aside as a water resource reserve or classified for habitat and might be selected by a municipality and subdivided and disposed of.
Yeah. That's one of the good things about this legislation is those actual land selections that the municipalities will make under the 10% will still be negotiated with DNR, and there'll still be a process of what lands are. And it's not to say that a municipality will be actually receive title to a water resource area or a wildlife habitat, but that will be used as part of the base to compute their entitlements. And as far as I know, DNR can speak to it, but the same process for actual selections will be still negotiated between the municipality and the department.
That's correct. Madam Chair, we have to do an interest finding for each of these conveyances, in essence, so that the selection by the municipality does not automatically translate into a conveyance. If there is a state's interest in holding on to some of this land, we are able to do so.
Madam Chair, in other words, if the department determines that the wildlife habitat classification should override a municipal selection, then the department could tell the municipality, no, this is too important for habitat, and you go and select something else. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair, on a case-by-case basis, although, of course, the bill would make wildlife habitat open to selection.
Thank you. That satisfies me. I think...
What section of the bill were you discussing when you were saying that it would? Are you talking about section 6, where you were saying that it would be, you know, negotiations between you, the department, and the municipality at the time? Is that what you're talking about there, or is it section 7?
Madam Chair, I don't think the existing process for the interest finding is embodied in this bill. So you don't have it in front of you in the bill, and I would have to search it out in the statute to tell you where we do that.
Yes, Senator Coghill.
Madam Chairman, I think that I'd like to have an analysis of that, Ned, if we possibly can. I think this thing is really a far-reaching bill, and I want to make sure that our process, that we're not going to give false hope to people out there that they're going to be able to get selection and then find that there's encumbrances on those selections?
Madam Chair.
Do they have the chance to unappropriated land to be able to put it into industrial classification or into selling it or leasing it or whatever they want to do with it, or is there a restriction under the other portions of this act, not in the bill?
Madam Chair, once the municipality gets the acreage, generally they can do what they want with it, although sometimes if it's important water resources land or wetland or something like that, they will accept it with a covenant. For instance, Anchorage has done that in a couple of cases where they're willing to accept the land and agree to manage it for water resources. And generally we try to work with the community and figure out what they need. And we also have a general rule to convey the land without conditions.
But those, Ned, Madam Chairman, those are negotiated in the you know, those are the exception to the rule, not the rule.
Correct.
Yeah, if you look at this as saying that what the bill doesn't do is say that if there's all these land classifications within your boundaries, you are not going to receive 10% of each one of them, but you are going to receive an amount of land equal to 10% of the total state acreage. So there may be many times where a wildlife habitat will not either be proposed for selection or title conveyed to the municipality by DNR, but the 10% of that acreage classification will still accrue to the community, although it may be in another classification such as resource management.
As part of their entitlement?
Yes.
To meet the
so they may get 30% of their entitlement of resource management land, and no percent would be wildlife, but it'll be averaged across the board. They'll be able to select 10% in the figure to compute their entitlement.
Okay. Senator Coghill?
Then, Ed, could you answer me, what is Section 8? What are we repealing? We're getting a pretty broad sweep of repealers there. There's about 10 different sections in that.
On Section 8, Madam Chair, I can characterize them, and I guess probably what I had to do is give you a sectional analysis that gives a better description than I'm about to. What we did was we went through the existing statute under Chapter 65 and tried to find any place that we thought there was language that was basically out of date because it related to 1978 and it had a timeline attached to it. And there were a couple of other changes that we made in there that I would have to look back through my notes while you're talking to tell you what those were as well.
I think that's fine. There's a number of questions the committee has, and so we won't be moving the bill today. So if you just put that on your notes to get back to us. Senator Fisher?
Madam Chair, I think a sectional analysis will be very valuable in a complex bill like this. I think in the future it would also be valuable to have the original existing statute just so we could see the context. I might just add that I was very glad to see that you're taking this occasion to also straighten out the mental health.
We're getting ahead of it.
Madam Chair, I have a separate question. This is for information. To what extent are there state lands in the Nanda region that would be available for selection by a new borough if established in that area? Just offhand.
I'm not aware of what the state acreage is up there within those boundaries, but I can get that back to you this afternoon.
Oh, it's not urgent. We've been, to just have a map.
In DNR, we've been using a figure of, I think, 240,000 acres, something like that. That's the ceiling for municipal entitlement acreage in the new Nana Borough, Northwest Arctic Borough.
Okay, thank you. Further questions from the committee? Okay. Why don't we go out then to the people that are listening on teleconference and... And Anderson, are you interested in testifying on Senate Bill 414?
I'm very much in favor of this, the way I read it.
Sir, would you give us your name, please, for the record?
I'm sorry, my name is Bruce Willard, City Councilman, City of Anderson.
Continue.
I'm very much in favor of this bill. I'm a little confused. What y'all are talking about today is an update of 414, right?
Yes, sir. There was a sponsored substitute that was read across the floor this morning, and so that is a little bit confusing. I'm sure it hasn't gotten a chance to get out there to you. And as you heard, we are going to be holding the bill because there is a number of questions the committee has and some backup information they need. So that'll give you a chance to get the sponsor substitute and be able to address any concerns or anything that you have in the bill. So, but if you have just general comments, go ahead, and then your senator would like to talk to you.
Okay, I don't really have anything more until I see what this, the amendment is.
Bruce, this is Senator Coghill. What I'll do, Bruce, is I'll send you a couple copies of it and a couple copies of, we had a bill drafted, and a lot of the provisions in this bill were in the bill that Lanson worked on, and what I'll do is I'll send you both of them, and I'm going to do a comparison. I haven't seen this bill until this afternoon, but I'll get our guy, Dan Beck, will get on and get an analysis between the two of them, and if there's some things in the bill that you folks drafted with Tom Hawkins, why, I'll get them incorporated as we go down the process.
Okay, thank you very much.
Good, thank you. Senator Ferguson, you have a question.
I apologize to everyone here and everyone on the teleconference for the sponsor substitute, but as I mentioned at the start, this bill was drafted in haste to meet the 35th day deadline that we had. And then after working with the Department of Community and Regional Affairs and the Department of Natural Resources, we came up with the sponsor substitute. And I don't wish this bill to go forward until everybody understands what it is. Everybody has a chance to receive the sponsor substitute. But it was my only way of showing that we were interested in change.
Okay. Bruce, do you have any further comments?
No, I don't.
Thank you. We'll go now to Anchorage. Is the Anchorage participant interested in testifying on this particular bill?
No, she's interested in the next bill.
Thank you. Are the participants in Haines, and are they interested in this bill?
No, our participants haven't even arrived yet.
Oh, okay, fine. Well, when they do arrive, if you'd find out for sure, because as you know, we have about three different bills, and you might, if they are interested in this one, you might bring them up to date regarding the sponsor substitute, as well as we will be rescheduling. Would you do that for me, please?
Yeah, I will do that.
Thank you. Okay, now come back to the committee, and is there anything further? Does everyone ask all the questions?
No, statute. You've got 29 and 38.
29. Mm-hmm.
Does anyone on the committee desire some further information from the department before?
Madam Chairman, how long are you going to hold this till next week, or what's your pleasure?
I see the department shaking their head yes, so I would say it's going to take you a week or 10 days to get the information together, or how soon? Say on teleconference, please, because people out there are listening. Thank you.
Yes, Madam Chair, we could try to get you at least the sectional analysis and comments within a week, and I don't know whether I can guarantee that we'll have the kind of specific community by community information that you're asking for by then, but we'll have at least the beginnings of that for you.
Okay, and I can't remember what our schedule is, but I think we have scheduled bills up, so it may even be a week and a half before they come back.
Well, Madam Chairman, I'd like to, because of the widespread part in my district, and I'm going to be sending this out to several of the communities, and it takes sometimes just a week to get the stuff out there, so we'll get right on it, and I'll get an analysis. But I'd like to get that section analysis as soon as possible, because I'd like to send that to those communities also.
We'll try to get that done, Madam Chair, by Thursday or Friday, and get that to the members of the committee.
Good. Thank you very much. Senator Sturgis, did you have
to do that?
Senator Fisher?
Just in terms of schedule, does this mean that essentially we're talking about 2 weeks from now, because if Senator Coghill mails his materials out end of this week, he can't really figure on people having it until
about Wednesday or Thursday.
So, I mean, we're really talking about 2 weeks from today for responses from those communities.
Yeah, and then I think we may get in. Do we have, what is, today is what, the 12th?
11th.
The 11th. So that's 18th, 25th, and then I wasn't planning on having a committee meeting on the 27th, which is that day just before Good Friday. I thought probably almost everybody would probably be leaving on that flight and wouldn't be around. So it may then have to even be that following week, if, depending on when we get the information, so as we get into that one-long week. Mm-hmm. Okay. Senator Sturgiski, did that bring up some comments from you regarding the law?
No, just that.
Okay.
I'd like to see in the analysis any impact it might have really out there, because this is sort of like you push down one button and five more come up, and I want to be sure we don't do that, that we solve the problem, don't create a whole bunch more of potential litigation and so on. But I do think that, you know, newly formed boroughs, I think that's one of the things that they should have. So I'm supportive of the basic bill, but I just think we ought to, you know, have some detailed work on it. And if anybody runs into another question they want, if they need a, they need to go directly to the department and go through my staff, and we'll be sure that you have all the information next time. So, okay, thank you. Well, we'll go ahead and take up Senate Bill 407 at this time. And again, Senator Ferguson, if you'd like to speak to your bill.
Madam Shannon, I introduced this bill at the request of the Marysville Borough Mayor and administration. This bill would appropriate $385,000 to from the general fund to the Department of Community Regional Affairs for payment as a grant to the Marysville Borough for general government purposes to offset loss of revenue due to boundary change. I don't have with me the testimony that was given by the attorney for the North Slope when we were going through the oversight hearings on the North Slope Borough detachment. But at that time, the borough mayor did mention why they wanted this, and it was at the request of the mayor that I introduced it. And I don't have anyone testify, essentially, but I know there's some opposition to the bill.
You don't want to wait till tomorrow to see what the government, the oil price projections are to see if you have any money or not. So.
Oh, have Rex may want to speak to
that. Okay. Only this. I'm
would you come up? Because we have teleconference, and I don't know who out there might want to be listening
only in the
on
sense,
this.
I'm not a registered lobbyist for the North Slope Borough. I'm an attorney for them, and that's, I can try to explain what this is about.
Okay.
But
why
I
don't you put that on the record then, in case there is a
question
there. Thank
okay.
you.
Certainly don't want to get in trouble with the APOC. I first put on the record, I'm an attorney for the North Slope Borough, and I've been doing most of their litigation over years, tax matters and such.
Your
as
name?
That. Avram Gross.
Okay.
Yeah. And just for the record, it might be pointed out that Av Gross has came up to testify at the request of the committee.
Thank you.
We just asked Mr. Gross.
Thank you. Just now.
I just wanted to point out what the bill does is basically what the local boundary commission did was, for the first time in the state's history, go through a process of detachment, and in which an area of a borough was actually reduced, and I think what the borough, I wasn't privy to the dispute the borough had over that issue. What's come up now is the question that, assuming that you do detach land from an existing borough with bonded indebtedness, you know, that already has obligations based on its existing lands and tax base, should there be any compensation to that borough to basically compensate them for the land which has been removed and now is unavailable to pay off the debts? And this computation of $382,000 was arrived at by basically taking the assessed value of the land which was removed, the present assessed value, not with a mine on it, but the present assessed value of the land which was removed from the borough by the local boundary commission, you know, and allocating the percentage of that, the taxes which would have come from that land to pay off the bonded indebtedness of the borough from that land. It was allocated to that land. And that's where this bill was created. That was the mayor's desire. And as I say, I wasn't privy to it when it was originally created, and the attorney for the North Slope Borough, the general counsel, is not here, but he did ask me if I'd come up and at least make myself available, I may be able to answer some questions about it.
Let me just ask you again. Sure. They took the present assessed value of the acreage that was removed, right?
Right. That's correct.
And then now, how did they determine in relationship to the debt? Is that?
Yeah. They took the total area-wide assessed value.
Mm-hmm.
And then they took the area of the Red Dog that was removed
mm-hmm.
from the borough, and they
right.
figured the assessed value of that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then they took the total borough bonded indebtedness.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then they took the percentage of the area that's being removed, right? The value of that compared to the value of the total. And they took that as a percentage of the bonded indebtedness. Okay, which is, in essence, the amount of the bonded indebtedness which is allocated to the land which has been removed.
Right. And that's
exciting.
All the bonds that are outstanding
at the present
the time when the detachment took place.
That's correct.
Senator
that's
Cockhill.
How it was done.
Well, I would like to see that all of those hoops put into some kind of a correlation from the firm. But I still think that the end is why the state? I mean, if you have a detachment between two boundary areas, then why shouldn't it be that the assessed valuation of the loss of the land from one local government entity to the other local government entity be the liability of the other local government entity and not the treasury of the state? And my people in District J paying for the sins of something up there where that they've detached a part of the land from one local government to the other. Where's the rationale there, or is that a policy call?
Well, it's a policy call, obviously, Senator, but the reason that it's being requested is because it's the state that's removed the land. It's not the new Nana Borough that's removed the land. It will go to the Nana Borough, but it's through an action of the state that this land has been detached from the North Slope Borough. It wouldn't necessarily have to go to a Nana Borough. I mean, what the state could do, I assume, is, you know, another day, take a piece of land out of the Fairbanks North Star Borough and decide that, well, this land wasn't really reserving services or wasn't adequate, so it was just going to change the limits of the borough. You could have a resolution to do that. If you can do it for the purpose of creating a new one, I assume you can do it for the purpose of modifying an old one. But, I mean, it's the state action which has done this. The Nana Borough didn't do it.
That's what I was afraid of, because I think if you go back into the record, we reflected that when we had the hearings with the local boundary commission, and they were saying that just because community and regional affairs had initiated the action to the boundary commission, that there was no liability on the part of the state.
There isn't. I'm not saying there's a legal liability. I mean, we wouldn't be here for legislation if there was.
So what we're basically doing here, Ab, is that we're setting a policy standard that in the future, anytime there's a division of a local government entity, that the state is going to come along and pay for the loss of revenue from one to the other, regardless of whether there's a gain on the other side. That's my point.
That may be true, Senator Cockhill, but remember, this is the first time this has happened in 25 years, and, you know, it may never happen again. I mean, I'll be quite frank with you. I mean, the North Slope Borough faces a very difficult situation. I mean, this is a small area, right? And as far as the total amount of money that's involved here, you know, maybe in a falling economy, obviously $380,000 isn't the end of is a lot of money, but it's not the end of the world. What would happen if suppose Prudhoe Bay ever was detached from the North Slope Borough, and all of a sudden, suppose Prudhoe Bay was ever detached from the North Slope Borough, and you think about it in terms of the bonded indebtedness, which is outstanding for the North Slope Borough, and you remove land like that, then you talk about setting a precedent, which I think is highly desirable, which is that when bonds are sold, there's at least a guarantee that the land from which the source of revenue is going to come to pay the bonds isn't detached. This is the whole problem with detachment in the first place. You're starting to change the assets on which bonds were sold. But, I mean, you know, the Local Boundary Commission in its wisdom did that. But then the question is, you know, it's not a very good precedent for bondholders either.
Senator Fisher?
Madam Chair, thank you. I hope that when we get the background analysis that Senator Cockhill asked for, we could also get an economic analysis of current value of the 385 in terms of sort of what the current proper discounted value would be in years hence, so that the discount the current value would be much less.
Well, specifically, you know, if I can assist the committee, exactly what is it? I mean, I understand your question, Senator Fisher, but when you said the economic analysis, what other economic analysis would you like me to provide to the committee?
That's essentially
just that. How it works,
right.
Basically.
How we arrive at the.
I'd be delighted to do that.
Mm-hmm. I guess just to have the equation, we'd like to see the figures in the equation.
I mean, I think
as well as the additional question that Senator Fisher asked.
I think everyone understands that, you know, there was a lot of unhappiness, obviously, in the North Slope Borough and having the land attached, and I think what they're looking for is some vehicle to make that a little more palatable.
Madam Chair,
just
one additional item. This is something that came up during the discussions of the detachment, and that is to what extent was the, you might say, the real estate of the borough pledged to support the bonds as against the oil revenues and other revenues of the borough. In other words, that the interesting to see the bond prospectus and whatever was behind it.
I believe it's a full faith and credit of the borough, Senator, which will be everything. I'm sure that's true. But
I know that you're, you know, that this looks to me like as if it's a punitive settlement of the state to the borough that the Boundary Commission took some land from. I have no problem with the Boundary Commission's action. I think that they were constitutionally able to do that. I think that they could have initiated it. I think that if the Boundary Commission in years back had looked at the constitutional provisions of boundary areas, if they would have taken the watershed boundary area, we would never have been in this problem in the first place. But I have a problem with my people in my district having to pay the price of what is happening in another area when it's between two local government entities. Now, if the state divested the North Slope Borough of that land and it wasn't going any place but into the open entry land of Alaska, why then I think that maybe the state would have something to do there. But it would seem to me that this ought to be a settlement between the two boroughs, and I really have a problem with it because I can see Chugiak and their tax base moving away from the municipality of Anchorage, and they dry the treasury up in a hurry because of their assessed valuation. And what would happen to the creation of revenues that we need for general government? I think it's a real problem. It's not this individual case. It's a matter that we're starting out a whole new structure here, and when you do that, you set the marching band for other things.
Well, the divestment, of course, in by itself started a whole new ballgame. And I suppose we're all trying to cope with the results of that. But, I mean, when it's all said and done, it was a state action that removed land from the North Slope Borough, wherever it went. I mean, it didn't have to go to another borough. It could have been left vacant, and then a new borough could have formed subsequently and taken the land. I mean, it isn't, I mean, as I understand, NANA didn't have any rights to seize land from the North Slope Borough. They had to go to a state agency and say, we would like this land. The state agency made a decision and gave it. You know, I mean, and so it's not...
Well,
Madam Chairman,
I guess we, you know, I like to debate with you, right. But the thing is that the state agency may have initiated, and that was my problem in the whole process, that if the Boundary Commission had initiated it, the Boundary Commission is not a state agency, it's a constitutional agency.
But it's still state agency.
It's a state agency, but it's still constitutionally constructed in how it operates. And I don't see how they could come and do all of these things and then come back to us and say, we want you to take from all of the people of the state to give this local government because we did something. Okay. I think we've got some real problems here.
Last word, if I can.
What
you're ending up saying is that a state agency, and by state agency, I don't mean community and regional affairs, I mean the local boundary commission, that the local boundary commission can make a decision to effectuate a larger state policy, which is reflected in the local boundary commission acts and borough acts and one thing or another, at the expense of a particular borough. And you know, I'm not here crying crocodile tears, but I mean, in essence, one borough has given up something to effectuate a larger state policy, you know, of creating boroughs and one thing or another. And so I don't think it's unreasonable that if that's what happened, that the state itself recognized the responsibility to deal with it.
The amount of money is small compared to the operating budget from the North Slope. And this was done, I believe, for a precedent. So the state wouldn't be doing this. But I think also, if it wasn't possible to derive any money out of this set precedent, I think it would be an overall policy by the legislature to say this shall not happen again. And I believe we assumed that rule. We could draft legislation and say this shall not happen again, if that's the policy that we're going to make.
Thank you. Any further comments from the Any more last words? Yeah?
Well, I assume you want. Would you like
yes,
me to furnish
like
the information?
Back,
I'll be happy to do that within a week.
Okay, good. Is there anyone else out here that would like to be heard on Senate Bill 407? Okay, if not, is there anyone out on the teleconference line that wants to be heard on 407? Hearing no one, we will then now go to Senate Bill 448. Mm-hmm. Senator Fisher, would you like to speak first?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The purpose of Senate Bill 448 is, as described in my February 18 memorandum that's attached to your copy of the bill, is essentially to extend home rule authority to second-class cities, and to particularly to smaller communities. Under existing law, a small second-class city or even an unincorporated community cannot achieve home rule. Under home rule, a community can essentially exercise virtually all powers that it feels is appropriate to run its own affairs. I passed out copies of the Constitution, and the purpose of a local government article, it starts on top of page 35, it is stated to be to provide for maximum local self-government, and this bill is designed to promote that maximum local self-government. Under the Constitution, first-class cities are given the direct authority to go to home rule. The legislature is granted authority under Section 10 to extend home rule to other boroughs and cities. That is what Senate Bill 448 is designed to do. Madam Chair, I'm not sure I should go into a full explanation. I'm not sure it's necessary. I believe everyone here is well enough schooled in what home rule means, how charters operate, and the restrictions that currently exist. Let me just say that the bill is so drafted as to specifically exempt second-class cities from having to go through the process of becoming a first-class city, and thereby having to assume education powers, planning and zoning powers, taxation assessment and collection powers. The bill also removes the 600 population exemption, as would be applicable to such communities, essentially allowing about any second-class city to go directly to home rule. Senator DeVries and I traveled around. We saw last November and December, we saw the desire on the part of many small communities to run their own affairs, and this is designed to permit that.
Madam Chair, Ms. Grzelewski?
Just a couple of questions. I'm a little confused. Under Section 2, we talk about home rule city in a third-class borough, and we grandfather to the one existing third-class borough, so I assume that language stayed in for that purpose. Senator Fisher, would you assume that's correct? We talk about the third-class borough.
We don't have one.
There's only one.
Yeah, but that we retained the wording. I guess that
well, we have
must
Madam Chair, that was crafted by CNRA, and I will let the commissioner.
That's existing language.
Well,
it's
underlined. Yeah, when we revised municipal code, I know I thought we struck information dealing with third-class boroughs, but maybe we didn't.
With there's
Commissioner,
I can explain about it.
Senator Fisher, do you prefer to give the explanation? Whoever.
Commissioner. Madam Chair, in the new Title 29, yes, there can be no. Excuse me?
Your name.
Oh, Jeff Smith, Community and Regional Affairs. Under the new Title 29, the one in effect January 1st, there can be no more third-class boroughs in the state. Mm-hmm. But we do have to keep language for the existing third-class borough of Haines. And should there be a second-class city ever to be located within the third-class borough of Haines that would desire this, that's why that language is contained in the bill.
All right. Then, Madam Chair, Senator Fisher, as I understand, there would be no mandatory powers. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. Then, making an assumption, we have a second-class city, and I guess they go down to 150 people. They're small, many of them, right?
Yes.
And assuming they wish to take on education, And it was a local option, and that's what people wanted. Is that allowed by your bill? It appears to me that it is.
Yes, there's no restriction on a small city, the second-class city that grows a home rule roof. There's no restriction against such a city adopting or taking on education, planning and zoning, levying taxes. It would be up to the people in drafting and approving the charter to decide what their municipality will do.
Madam Chair, just as a comment, I trying again to take the policy of what we're doing here and looking ahead. We do have a real movement, people dissolving cities and all kinds of things and creating small rather than trying to solve the problem, some regional problems. And I just see some where the people might feel they could have more power and want to run their educational thing, but do a terrible disservice if we allowed for just a whole series of small little units to be formed. It's just been against, in a sense, all the process toward areas kind of coming together. And I see it as a major policy change that has, you know, good and bad, but it's I'm concerned about it.
In other words, what you're saying is that maybe a second-class city should not only not be required to assume education powers if it goes home rule, it should not be allowed the home rule status to take on education. Is that what you're
saying? Well, I'm suggesting that there may be a size where it's appropriate. If it's a very small district, the idea of when you stop to think about smaller communities where they come together for vocational programs, kinds of cost sharing things that you get in the district. The state is going to have to provide pretty much of the educational dollar. I don't think we're talking about communities with a lot of money. And we're certainly adding a lot of costs if we have a whole bunch of small little units in terms of administrative costs and others, plus the fact perhaps some lack of benefits and abilities for people with very, very small districts.
Yeah. Madam Chair, before Jeff comments on it, mm-hmm. I certainly I would go along in considering language that would prevent sort of local option at assumption of education powers. I was very much concerned last year when that special case came along of certain BIA schools that had been run by the local communities being able to essentially establish their own REAAs and to have the fracturing of existing REAAs through this device would probably not be desirable.
Senator Coghill?
Jeff, I like what Senator Fisher's trying to do, but I'm afraid that we might be going a little bit too far too fast. And I'm a little bit concerned about the fact that under 448 that we're going to abrogate some responsibilities that local government units must accept in order to go those other steps. I had to put it on the back burner, but I've got a step annexation type thing that I talked to you about that we're going to do in the next session of the legislature. And I have some problems with home rule status to a second-class city because I'm afraid we might get a patchwork going out there that we won't be able to stop. And does that make sense to you? Would you comment on that? I agree with total maximum home rule status, but I could see them going into a position where that they would have different statuses and that they might create burdens on the part of community regional affairs by demand of more resource, more time, more research on your part that they wouldn't necessarily have to do under this bill. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, well, when Senator Fisher first talked about his concept with us this year, we had some concerns. We kind of don't have a problem with the general thrust of the bill. We had some concerns about eliminating any minimum population requirement. I think what we finally came down on and why we don't really object to it in our position paper So we felt the process that a community would go through to become, to go to home rule from second class is a pretty well thought out and detailed process of reviews and checks. And if a petitioner would come in that did not have the financial resources and capabilities to deliver the services that they hope to encompass under their home rule charter, there are two protections for that to prevent a community from doing that that doesn't have the capabilities or the financial resources to accomplish that. The first step would come in when the petition and charter and financing plan and the other aspects of the borough service delivery would be reviewed and analyzed at the departmental level. And a recommendation would then be made to the local boundary commission on what we thought of that. The second would come in during the public hearing and the review by the local boundary commission. So we felt that with those protections, that those concerns would be adequately addressed.
Yes, Madam Chair. So what you're saying then is that the local boundary commission change of status, the local boundary commission's got the checks and balances on this, so that we could never abrogate the constitutional requirement that the least amount of governmental units is the best kind of government. In other words, we couldn't get two local, two home rule, second-class cities bumping against each other and still not being able to accept the responsibilities of many of the things that first-class cities have to do. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I think that if you look at who this bill really applies to, and you look at their geographical location in the state, we don't think that that's going to be a problem at all. I mean, clearly, this is one avenue to address what has become a real serious problem. I think in talking with Senator Fisher, he doesn't believe, as we don't, that this will be a panacea to solve all the problems. But it is that first step, and it does, I think, reinforce the problem that we have in the state right now, that we must simply sit down 25 years after statehood and take another look at the governmental structure for state political subdivisions that we've established and take a look at them to see if they're working or if they're not working, why they're not working, and what areas and steps we can do to change that. And I think this is one step, not to solve the problem completely, but to recognize that there is a problem, provide one avenue to solve that problem, but to really focus in on that there's a much deeper problem here that needs to be addressed.
Madam Chair, I don't know, Jeff, what you've said, really, because if you take steps, it always makes an ultimate step either more simpler or more difficult. And if you make a decision, or if we make a collective decision, that eventually everybody should be in a borough, then we're taking the wrong step, because what we're doing is saying we're going to create a whole series, maybe, I mean, this is all maybe, of entities that will have to vote to join. I mean, people then will have to give up powers that they have gained. If, on the other hand, you know, we're not in second class, cities do not have to, under a unification move, under a borough situation, have to go along. Just conceivably, look at the Nana region. They have, what is it, 11 small, relatively small, second-class cities, I think mostly Norvik and so on. I don't know how many first-class there are. If they were all home rule and had gone that way, they jolly well would have a great time trying to form a borough up there that would encompass the whole kind of thing. So I don't know if, when you talk about taking steps, I admit we've done a deplorable job of deciding how particularly rural Alaskan small communities are going to go. But I'm not so sure that this is going to add to that problem or process.
Madam Chair, as a few of you know, I've been a very strong advocate of creating boroughs organized as well as unorganized throughout the state, and I sure wouldn't want to put any obstacles in the path. I guess when I was approaching this, I was not thinking, it never occurred to me that we would be creating obstacles to borough formation. Are we, Jeff?
No, I don't believe we are either. If you let's take a look at the Northwest Arctic Borough up in the Nana region and assume that the 10 second-class cities that would be located in that jurisdiction were home rule, would have no effect whatsoever on establishment of the borough. Let's say that for
why?
The... Well, because on education, planning and zoning, and taxation, all those powers, whether they're exercised by a home rule city or a first-class city or whatever, would automatically be assumed by the borough.
The
no one would
have to vote for it. They have to vote for it. If they don't want to vote for it, then the borough doesn't get formed. They have to agree to, a second-class city does not have to agree to. All first-class cities or home rule cities have to support the formation in order to be included.
Otherwise, they're excluded?
Well, let's see. How does that work? It doesn't form.
They have to form.
If it's within the boundary, you know, you've got a boundary that encompasses it. They've got to
pass inside the city as well as in the organized area. Is that what you're saying, Senator?
Each one.
Each, if it's a first-class city or home rule, then it has to pass inside those cities as well as.
Well.
Okay. Yes, Senator Cronkite.
When we get into the formation of boroughs, Madam Chairman, why we're in a position where then they do assume educational power. They do that. And the thing is that if a second-class city or a first-class city in a borough, it doesn't make a bit of difference because the educational power is assumed by the borough. I mean, that's the way we have it. But I think Senator Fisher is correct. If you look at Section 6 in the unorganized borough, you know, it says, the legislature shall provide for the performance of services it deems necessary or advisable in the unorganized borough. Jeff, you've been through this a million times. Allowing for maximum local participation and responsibility, and I think that that's correct. Then it says it may exercise any power or function in an unorganized borough which the assembly may exercise in an organized borough, which basically says that the legislature is the assembly for the unorganized borough. What I'm saying is maybe if we set this bill and said an act relating to second-class cities in the unorganized area of Alaska, that maybe that might then clarify the area that the senator is concerned about.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm not sure that would resolve Senator Sterjalewski's point, because that if a home rule city has to approve formation of a borough, if anything, that would be the focus on that particular problem. I would suggest, Madam Chair, that if Jeff have an opportunity to really research this, because as far as I'm concerned, there should be an exclusion of communities incorporated under this as home rule cities having the authority in effect to separately vote and retard formation of a borough that otherwise wouldn't have this obstacle. I would also suggest that following Senator Coghill's point, that the education issue be looked at very carefully, because probably we should amend the language on lines, on page 2, lines 4 through 7, to, if anything, say may not operate schools, or make them part of the preceding sentence, so that there is no question about that, because as I see it, if this went through, a second-class city going home rule would already be within the existing jurisdiction that provides for education, and that the trend in the United States for more than 50 years has been for consolidation rather than for fragmentation, and we certainly shouldn't undermine that process now.
Madam Chair? Yes, Senator Sterjalewski.
One of the major issues where this has come up before has been from the second-class city of Bethel. Bethel attempted to go first-class for one purpose, and that was that they could take on their school. Now, they're a community of substantially larger size that we're going to be dealing here, and they were not able to go, you know, to make that leap, and yet they're a community much larger than this, and boy, I could just imagine. Maybe we wouldn't have had the dissolution request, and I guess the governor's done that for Accucheck, or saying that they can dissolve it. But boy, that just really, you know, there's so much enthusiasm for the people to have that power. But I fear that the power is, they'll be very hollow. And so, you know, I think we really need to look at what the impact is. If we give them the option, what does that mean in terms of a whole lot of small communities out there thinking they've gotten power when they really pulled themselves out? I mean, in a sense, have we done anything on revenue sharing or access to any kinds of funds? I don't know. It's just.
Madam Chair, I think we would have done for them what we did for first-class cities in allowing them to go home rule. they may not have gotten any more powers than they had before we became a state, but they were able to exercise their powers in their own fashion. And essentially, this is what we would be doing here. This bill arose out of the discussions of Akiyachuk and the situation in other communities, where the people feel that they are not empowered. Now, maybe they will not get more power under this. They may get more authority, but actually not more power. But at least they will make the decisions at the local level as to what they will do, what they won't do, and how they will do it. And that is really what it seems to be about.
Yeah, Bethel is allowed now. Can go second class to home rule. The Bethel 35, I guess we call it. 3,500 people in 35 square miles can now go second class to home rule. They've not acted on that, nor have we heard that there still seems to be any interest in doing that.
Jeff, just another question. On municipal assistance and state shared revenues, is there any difference on second class cities to home rule? So would there be any,
maybe
would
not.
They be dividing that pie up? Could there be the dividing of that pie in smaller sections?
No, there's no real difference anymore between your classification of a city. It's basically just straight entitlements. Now a first class or a home rule city that exercise more local taxation powers would benefit more under a revenue sharing program than, let's say, a straight second class city. But basically the allocations are made not really on what class of city they are.
But as they would assume different powers, then that would be putting another request into the pie. Is that correct?
No, the only effect it would have is, let's say you take a small second-class city that's not exercising any property tax or really local taxation. They become home rule, institute a property tax. They would have more locally generated revenue than they had before, would go into the allocation, and they would end up with more revenue-sharing money. But it's no longer, the revenue sharing program really no longer based on what powers you exercise. It's really become more of a tax entitlement formula base for revenue sharing, population base for municipal assistance, and then if you exercise road and health facility powers, you get more money.
Senator Caldwell?
Yeah, that was my question. Yeah. Home rules are being, second class cities right now are restricted to a fairly fine position. Taxation, boundaries, there's a lot of things they don't have to do to try and keep the cost of local government down. Does this tip that equation? You've talked about road powers, and could this be conceivable that a second-class city could start up, go to home rule, and get its own clinic authority or a hospital authority, and come in under that, rather than going up the steps and having a good tax base and a good sound assessment to be able to support those? You understand?
That's the major problem with it. I mean, if you look at this bill, there's one major benefit that we see and there's one major drawback. By going to first class, they have to exercise three mandatory powers: education, taxing, and planning and zoning. Going second class to home rule, they could define a government that they didn't have to put those in place. They could exercise no planning, no taxation, no education powers. Now, that may not be too bad. On the plus side, we don't think it's going to change the power equation in the state. If this bill is going to do anything, it's going to make the people feel more comfortable that they're defining the relationship that they're going to have as individuals with that city government than is currently constituted under Title 29 as a second-class city.
Senator Caldwell?
Do you realize what you said? I mean, that's a big mouthful, because the thing my question is this going to change the equation as far as REAs, for the responsibility of school districts out there, the responsibility of health districts, the responsibility of all these things? When we established second-class cities, we wanted the minimal amount of restrictions on those people so that they could establish a self-motive form of government. I understand what Senator Fisher is trying to do, and I'm 100% in support of it, but I see so many tips in the equation there that I want to make sure that we don't do something that we don't want to do.
Well, I mean, that education is a problem, and we have REAAs created around the state, and there is an opportunity to fragment that educational delivery system. But
Madam
it's,
Chair, but it's, excuse me. Why don't we just, I mean, we can go on forever, but why don't we ask CRA to do an analysis that will tell us what impact this might have on coastal resource service areas and their formation and coastal resource service area plans, rural education attendance areas, and what
rural,
is
rural formation.
Rural formation.
And rural
delivery of, yeah. Now there's one, isn't there one other kind of service area concept? There's CRSAs, there's REAAs, and there's one other.
Isn't there? Roads and health service districts.
Well, there aren't health service districts.
Yep.
You might be thinking of the regional resource authorities, the resource development authorities.
I hope that bill's dying an early death. Yeah.
Doesn't Glen Allen
repeal it, though?
Let's repeal it.
I know, but I would put it repeal.
Okay.
The hospital authority.
Well, Madam Chair, in response to that, we will provide that analysis to the committee on all that.
Let me. Most of the committee, I think, probably has some other things they need to take care of. But let me go out on the teleconference lines and see if there is anyone out there that would like to make comments on Senate Bill 448, and I'll stay here and receive your comments. Is there anyone out there?
Yes, this is the moderator, Anchorage. I have one participant,
Denise
Kennedy.
Yes, she. Go ahead, please.
Hello, my name is Jimmy Kennedy. I am the Deputy Director of the Rural Alaska Community Action Program, and I just wanted to make a short statement in support of Senate Bill 448, an act relating to home and home municipalities. And I think what I'm supporting basically is the intent. The intent or the show by the state that they are interested in allowing people to have more control over their local government. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Did the people in Haines ever show up?
Good.
What did she say?
I want to say something.
Okay. Oh, okay. Senator Fisher?
Janine, I would appreciate your sending a written statement to the committee on your position on Senate Bill 448, and also on whether it would be appropriate to say that education power should remain with REAAs and with boroughs rather than these smaller communities taking on education powers directly. Do you understand what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do, and I will do that.
Thanks a lot, Janine.
Great. Has Haines shown up yet? If not, then we'll go ahead and close the committee hearing. Thank you.
Now the work on dissolution.
We're going to do that
next year.